Check my inbox and what do I see? Just another day, another T-R-A-D-E. I'm an addict, and I need it in my veins. I'm an addict, otherwise I feel plain now. Every day I wake up, people got a problem. Making all these trades up, got me singing got them. But I've been paid up, I even started from the bottom. See, I don't wait up, I ain't even playing possum. So what it cost, I'm just a couple of firsts. Can't believe that it worked, not to say I'm a jerk. But I'm an addict, it's what I said in the first. You can curse all you want, you can pray in your church, but I'ma keep tapping return. I went up, I learned, I ain't trying to burn any bridges. I yearn for the feeling I earn. All my winners to turn. You had a cheek before I drop you like the beat. I'm an addict, and I'm not really ashamed. I'm an addict, I'm reclining with the brain. I'm an addict, and the pot is what I'm playing. I'm an addict,
Russ and Rocky.
Other names, Trade Addicts Pod. Let's go.
I am Frank in the chat, and I have a trading problem.
I am Rocky Pichella, and I also have a trading problem.
My name is Kyle Senra. I have a trading problem and also an intro problem.
That's okay. So do I. What's up, everybody? Welcome to session 375 of the Trade Addicts podcast, where even though the network went away, the DAP is always here to stay, which doesn't work on my new virtual background, but we'll work on that.
I know, it's because your DAP disappeared.
But we'll work on that. Patreon.com/TradeAddictsPod. You can see my virtual background and see me disappear. But the most important thing is we have Kyle Senra at Senra Says on the show with us today. See, intro problem. I still can't do it. Kyle, thanks for being on, man. How you doing tonight?
Oh, doing fantastic. It's been good. A couple of years since I've been on Trade Addicts, but
it's
been that long.
Yeah, I know we tried to make it work last year, Rocky, but just me recording with full press coverage, full press fantasy pod, it was always Tuesday nights at 9, like right when you guys were doing it. Could never find it to work. Well, full press coverage doesn't exist anymore. Full press hockey still does, but full press fantasy pod is done. So Tuesday nights are free. But I guess if I can allow me, I could plug my new venture.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
With Fantasy Six Pack, I actually started writing articles for them in September at the start of the NFL season. And in March, I approached Joe Bond about starting a new dynasty show on the Fantasy Six Pack YouTube channel. So joined by Jamie Pirogue and Rahul Natarajan, and together we formed Dynasty Six Pack. Not six hosts, three hosts, but we talk enough for six people.
So. And you all have a six pack, obviously. So yeah, that's it. I like that. All right. Before we get into the show, one question I ask all the guests now is, Kyle, what's a guiding principle you have in trading?
Yeah, so I think I came up with two, and one of them is to trade with a purpose. Like, what's and sometimes the purpose can be a pure player take. Like, I really do want to sell this specific player, or I want to go buy this specific player. But team construction purpose of why you're making a trade can also influence what I think is the second factor. Getting proper value is important, but I think having the proper trade structure is just as important. I might reject a trade someone sends me if the value is fine. Like, I think I'm getting good value back in return to what I'm giving, but the way it's structured, I don't like it. It's either too many assets on one side, not enough on the other, or here's a trade offer that was just given to me this week. So it's fresh in my mind. I give up my 26 first and Jared Goff for CJ Stroud.
Yeah,
I know Rocky hates it because he always prefers the opposite. He's always tear down at quarterback. But the principle of it, like, that's about, I'd give up a first and Goff in theory to get to Stroud in terms of value.
Mm-hmm.
But massive context, this is a salary cap contract league, and Stroud's salary is significantly higher than Goff. So
the other
manager is doing it because I think I've got the second most cap space going into the auction. They've got like the second fewest. So they're clearly trying to save the money and approaching the trade as, in straight dynasty principles, this would be at equal value. But to me, the context and the structure of it, these first round picks, it's a lot cheaper salary than the other, free agent players that we get in the auction. People tend to upbid the prices when players are available. Those rookie contracts are super valuable, not just for the players you get, but you can miss on a rookie pick and you still win in that format because, if I missed on the player, but the player does well enough that they can stay on my roster and occupy a roster spot at a lower cap hit. So, like, even that's why I've always valued rookie picks in that format a little more than I would in just a typical dynasty league, because, like, the floor of this pick being useful to you is a lot higher. The player could be awful, but if I don't have them, I've got to fill the roster spot in the auction. I might be spending a lot more to get an upgrade. So that's always a thing. Like, there's kind of a safety net in that. It's like, I can accept this player being bad because the contract is so cheap. So what do you pay for it, right? And the upside of, if you get a really good player at a cheap contract, I've got Bucky Irving now. And if you're in a normal dynasty league, and you have Bucky Irving.
I got Bucky Irving in the third round.
Yeah. You got him so cheap, and his value's gone up. But to actualize that value, you have to trade him away. And you think he's highly valued because he will score points, or we expect him to score a lot of points this year. So I would want Bucky Irving on my team. But in that type of format where, you know, it's typically what you see is the rookie picks are slotted like the NFL draft is. That's Jaden Higgins, right? The first round picks make more than the second round picks, right?
Yep, we'll get to that.
So that principle kind of happens where those fourth round picks, for instance, are a lot cheaper in salary than what those first round picks are getting. So having Bucky Irving on a fourth round pick in an RSO league, for instance, you don't have to trade him away to actualize that value. I get four really cheap years of this kind of production of him in my lineup every week at, for reference sake, RSO's salary cap is whatever the NFL salary cap is. So it's like $279 million this year.
Okay.
I think on my team this year, he's like $800,000, $900,000. Like, he's I think eventually, by year four, he'll be over $1 million, but it's going to be so cheap relative to, this year in the auction, Derrick Henry and Kamara went for crazy amounts, like 50 something million each. So to get Bucky Irving at only $1 million, like, I don't feel like I have to trade him away. Like, I'm going to actualize his value by having him for that cheap price and points to price the whole time. So that's one thing I love about salary cap contract leagues. The other is the auction component. I love doing auction drafts. I don't know if there's a lot of different things to talk about from guiding principles, but understanding trade structure is important. And because, I've got, this player's giving me, we hear the classic, you throw in 5/3 and it'll equal a first round pick. Something so egregious like that aside, but even, they're giving me three decent players for my one really good asset.
Yeah.
But that structure might not work because, I make this trade. I've got to cut two other players. So it's not just that one elite player I'm losing. I'm also losing a couple others. And if I'm true absolute scrubs that I'm almost happy to cut this player, that's fine. If you really need those roster spots open anyway, you maybe don't mind. But what if you do? What if that's a hard decision? You're having to cut a player that otherwise would be worth something in a trade because the trade structure that you just made doesn't fit with align with a number of starters. And you're giving away three pieces and you get an elite asset. You freed up two roster spots. You can go get two other players. So you're not even really giving up three on the one side. So trade structure, I find, is just as important as trade value.
Absolutely. I have tried the salary cap league because Rocky runs one, and it's too sicko for me. I can't match the prices up, and having good contracts makes me overpay certain things. Like, one of my worst trades I've ever had is I traded a 23 first for Zach Wilson, and it was in that salary cap league because he cost like $13 or something like that. I'm like, he's coming back. It's going to be great. They got Garrett Wilson, Brees Hall. Like, the offense is going to be great. So, yeah, I get the salary cap stuff, and I know Rocky plays in it if he has anything to add. But
I'd just add that there's no league where trading 23 first for Zach Wilson was ever a good idea.
I was in my first year, okay? Leave me alone. I was learning.
I agree. What Kyle was saying there, like, on the Bucky Irving, that is what's great about it. You don't want to trade him away. Now that he has value, if you have him at cheap price, it's like the exact opposite, like of a regular dynasty league. Like, you'd be looking to capitalize normally, but you're dying to get those guys that you get for minimal amount of dollars that are producing a bunch of points, and that's what you have in a Bucky Irving or a Puka Nacua, things like that. Yeah,
because I mean, you still get Irving's points if you start him all year this year. So, like, that's good if he scores really well.
And it's almost even harder to maximize the value if you trade him, because then you have to match up salaries, and you're probably not going to get a super cheap guy in return for Bucky Irving, which means you're paying more for similar-ish points potentially.
Yeah.
Like, even if you like look at last year's draft, like what other good running backs were there? Like Tyrone Tracy, who might be a backup or even third stringer this year. So just even at that position, weird year last year, you'd more likely jump different draft years. Like you could sell Bucky for someone super cheap this year. But I mean, I know Cam Scadaboo replacing Tracy, right? Who's going cheap enough to really make that worth it?
Right.
And if you have Bucky's points, that's amazing. How do you get RB7 value out of him in just a typical dynasty league, right? You either have to make that decision, either the points decision or the cash in the value decision, right? So it's,
yes,
salary cap contract, you kind of get to have both worlds in a certain
sense. Yeah, absolutely. Every time I say that Zach Wilson trade, I have to add this caveat. You learn by playing, people. You can listen to very smart people like Kyle and Rocky and semi-smart people like myself, because I've liked Zach Wilson and Will Levis in the past, so I'm not that smart. But you learn by playing and join a league. And if you don't like it, you can leave. Because Rocky and I have talked about this at length. Like, don't be afraid to leave leagues if you're not doing well or don't like it, or, you know. Obviously, try and like make everyone aware. Don't just leave, but like, don't be afraid to leave and try things.
Yeah, we said this a million times on the show, me and Russ, because we both commission a lot of leagues. The commission almost never cares. Just let them know just as early as you possibly can. They don't even care about the real. Some people are just worried about the reason that they're giving for leaving. Like, yeah. You can be a pain in the ass if you have to replace like multiple orphans, but no one's gonna get upset with you. No one's gonna. They're not going to be pissed that you're leaving the league. You just tell them you're leaving the league. Tell them as early as possible to give them the most time to find a new manager.
Yes. All right. We'll get to the news. We actually have news. I'm excited about it. Before we do that, we get to the question of the week. Kyle, you can answer this first because I know Rocky's going to roll his eyes at this question. As we enter camp news season, is there a particular brand of news that you focus on amongst all of the best he's ever looked? Quotes. And the reason behind this question, just as for context, is Kyle Juszczyk came out and said, you know, McCaffrey looks great. He looks healthy. Like he's going to come back and be stronger than ever. So when it's stuff like that, do you believe that? Or is that just his teammate hyping it up? Or like kind of what news strains do you believe versus not?
I guess part of it is like you could take it at face value. Okay, he's healthy right now. Doesn't mean he won't get injured at some point, either right. In training camp or the season, right? So I can believe that and accept, okay, McCaffrey is truly healthy right now, but him saying it's going to mean less than seeing him participate. Oh, if he's out there right. In the field in training camp, I know he's healthy. I don't need you to tell me. So, I mean, I tend not to really focus much on any of the positive stuff that's said this time of year. If something negative is said, that stands out. Like a coach kind of gives hints as to, oh, this player not doing well in a certain role as we expected, it's okay. Maybe project them for less touches this first year, especially with rookies coming in, right? Like we think rookies are going to be so hype, and then the coach is kind of pour cold water on it. Well, he's actually running back. So I think, oh my God, he looks amazing. Yeah, but he's super bad at pass protection. So we're just not going to play him very much as a rookie. He's going to have to learn how to get better at that. So I pay a lot of attention to the negative things said, because coaches really don't want to publicly say anything negative about their players. So when they do, you could tell it's so much even worse than that, but that's just the tip of the iceberg they're telling you. But it's usually so overwhelmingly positive that when something negative is said, it kind of stands out. And that, I think, is what I'll pay attention to.
The one big standard deviation before Rocky goes is the Jamar Chase stuff from like all those years ago when they said he couldn't catch the ball because the white lines weren't on it or something like that. And that was what someone ran with. But I thought that was funny.
I think he said that as a joke in an interview.
And someone ran with
like,
it.
Yeah. He was just kind of like, you know, it's my first day of training camp. Yeah, I dropped some passes and like that. Just throw it in a reason, right? Like,
yeah,
I don't think the coaching staff ever came out and said he can't catch the football. No. We're really worried about him and we're going to limit his snaps. Like, I don't think they ever had that concern.
No, so also I agree.
Understanding the context of the messaging.
Yeah. Rocky, I know you don't believe a thing that coaches say in camp, but anything that you believe?
I think Kyle gave like the only plausible answer to this question, which is what he said, is that maybe if you hear something negative, that is something to keep an eye on. Even then, I tend to not put as much stock in it until we start getting into the season. But he's right, like coaches and other players, everybody, nobody wants to talk about anything negative during at this part of the season. So If they actually are, that is a big red flag that, like he said, that it's actually maybe even worse than whatever's being, even if it's just slightly negative. They might just be trying to put a positive spin on how awful this guy is or something.
Yeah. All right, we'll get into the news. Speaking of camp news that people may or may not believe, Juwan Jennings wants a new contract or a trade from the 49ers. By the way, bear with me because there's listener questions with this news, so it's going to be a lot of reading for me for a second. He makes about $8 million this year before a void year next year, so he's basically in the last year of his deal. As a reminder, Ayuk is projected to miss the start of the season with Pup on the table. And a question from Dynastud, what do you think is the most likely outcome of the Juwan Jennings contract dispute? I can't see Shanahan dealing him. He's a great blocker and an ascending receiver in a room full of question marks at receiver. If you believe they extend him, where does he rank at wide receiver? So, Kyle, let's do big step back. One, do you like Juwan Jennings? Let's take the contract dispute out for a second. Do you like him on the Niners as the number one, the number two? Where do you see him kind of in that hierarchy this year in that offense?
Yeah, so I am kind of in the process right now of finalizing two projections that I do, touchdown projections and target share projections. And I fuse them together to really inform my wide receiver and tight end rankings for redraft, but those will feed back into Dynasty. That, okay, this tier of Dynasty, I'm going to, like all these players in this specific tier, I'm going to rank them based on their 2025 outcomes only. If I view them Dynasty value as the same, who gets the better year this year? And those are the guys I have higher in the rankings target. So from that perspective, it's such a hard thing to project for their target share because specifically Jennings, you know, he's been, what is his career average? It's including last year, his career average is 14.3% target share, but he had 26.3 last year.
Right.
So one crazy outlier year.
Yes.
Probably not going back to a 14% guy, but repeating a 26% target share, especially on that offense, seems to be super tough. Like they've regularly had like three or four guys around 20%, but rarely anyone getting to 25 or even higher. Maybe one guy will do it one year and the others will all kind of fade to 20. So to see, I'm looking at last year's target share, Jennings at 26.3 and Ayuk at 24.2. Like that's kind of crazy to have both of them that high. And yeah, part of that is Ayuk missed so many games.
I was going to say, is that for this season?
It's per game.
Okay. So yeah, because I would assume it would be Jennings was kind of lower and then stepped up when Ayuk went down and Ayuk was high. Like, I don't know if there's a trend for that, but I would guess.
I would think also, I mean, they're not exactly the same, but the McCaffrey missing so much time too.
Yes.
He's taking those targets had to go somewhere. He's, you know, catching like over 100 targets probably, or getting 100 targets probably.
And they didn't target Mason and Grendo. Like RB's target share on the 49ers last year was down to like 11.7%. And it had been basically double that, 22.8% the previous year, 21.5% Purdy's rookie year. And that was McCaffrey's first season with the team and wasn't Purdy the whole year, wasn't McCaffrey there the whole year. But that's just to kind of show like he's.
Right.
The running backs have kind of earned equal target share to Kittle and to Debo and Ayuk. Like that, they targeted basically all four positions about the same. Yep. Not the case last year. So, yeah, I think things balance out. Right now I have Kittle as the only one getting above 20%.
I agree with that, by the way.
But Jennings, Pearsall, and even McCaffrey in the running back room in general, all around 18, 19, maybe one of them hits 20%. So I think Jennings is in line fine there. And touchdowns, I think I had him for 4, which is a little bit less than last year. So my projections kind of have him not necessarily being the clear wide receiver one, like him and Pearsall basically being equal. But we've seen Jennings do it a lot better, so I have more confidence betting on him repeating what he did last year than Pearsall looked good, and he had some games that he flashed, but a true breakout sustained over a full season. I'm hesitant, I guess, to buy into that. I'm more ready to buy into Jennings, and it doesn't seem like there's a much of a price difference. In fact, if anything, I almost guess Pearsall's probably going earlier than Jennings in Dynasty value.
I think so.
So I'd still probably make the later investment on Jennings. It's funny because the 49ers, every year, it's drama with contracts that just drags out the entire offseason.
Yes.
Debo 2 years ago, the Get Debo Paid, campaign from fans was wild and insane. And come on, Dean, what are you doing? And they got it done like right after the preseason, like, right around when they're cut down to their 53-man roster. Oh, we'll do it then. did the same thing with Nick Bosa a couple years ago. This year, it seemed like everything was getting
signed. Ayuk last year, too. Remember, they almost traded him to the Patriots.
Yeah. And then I wondered, is this going to be the same case with Purdy and Kittle and those guys coming up? No, they got them both done immediately. So, man, no 49ers drama? This feels weird. And then Jennings brought the universe back.
Yes. On football, guys, and then I don't know if Rocky has DLF open, but Ayuk is 30, by the way, wide receiver 30, which is crazy to me because I've seen him for much lower discounts. Pearsall's 37 and Juwan is 55. Juwan's way down there. So
interesting. They're all slightly higher on DLF ADP.
Okay.
Ayuk's 35, Pearsall's 42, Jennings is 48.
That seem high for Ayuk to anyone else.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
A little bit.
I mean
he's above Godwin, Golden, Bird.
No. Yeah, no.
Devontae. No. Adams. Yeah.
No.
I'm almost embarrassed to say this. I've got Brandon Ayuk at wide receiver 56.
Yeah, no, I agree with you because he's going to – more likely than not, he's on the pup, it sounds like. And because why rush him back? The Niners look like a team who's going to load up again for one last push before they have to, like, pay literally everybody else who they didn't pay this year. And, like, why would you rush Ayuk back? Like, if you have Jennings and Pearsall and Kittle and, you know, the other 17 guys who catch one pass a year, like Jacob Cowing and, you know, the rest of them. But, like, I struggle with Ayuk because I think straight talent, he's probably the most talented. But he can't stay healthy. And he gets upset when he doesn't get the ball. Like, this whole thing with Jennings started in the Super Bowl. Right against the Chiefs when he had like Jennings had something stupid like 15 targets and Ayuk had like one and he basically that's what the whole fight started with. So
only two people in that game had multiple touchdowns. Mahomes threw two, Jennings threw one and caught one.
So, yeah,
that was a fun game.
Yeah, and like so yes, the Ayuk thing. I think he's the most talented, but to put him above Godwin and Golden and who else did you say? Devontae Adams?
Adams, yeah.
No. Especially now that we're getting close to point scoring season, Devontae is above Ayuk for me, especially if you're a competitor. So, okay. Anything else on the Niners?
Well, I think Jennings will sign an extension right after training
camp. I agree.
Or right after the preseason, like a week before the season starts, it'll be a huge drama, and then it'll just get done.
Yes.
And everything's fine. That's my takeaway.
I was just going to say, they probably will, but like we think of Jennings having a good year last year because it was so above anything he had ever done, but he did not have that great of a year.
He's making $8 million for a reason.
Right? Yeah, he's 77. I was just looking, 77 for 975 and six touchdowns, which is fine. And
it's how many games did he play everything?
I did not look. But I'm not sure. Okay. I don't have it game by game, it's just totals. But and in terms of fantasy, he was wide receiver 28, which is great for Juwan Jennings compared to what he'd done in the past.
Yes.
But it's also nothing special. So especially from a real life perspective, I kind of hope as a team that could, if they're all healthy, could compete with the Eagles. I kind of hope they waste a bunch of money on Juwan Jennings. but in terms of fantasy, I don't whether they sign him or not doesn't move the needle for me. If they're all healthy, even if he's the wide receiver one, he's probably option three. And Pearsall could absolutely move ahead of him if he advances in year two. So
yes.
I don't really. Again, I hope they do it from a real life perspective. It doesn't move the needle at all for me in terms of, and that's not even factoring in like if Ayuk comes back at some point this year. I'm not even talking about Ayuk. So, Juwan Jennings is sort of a non-factor to me whether he signs for more money or not.
Yes,
and
go ahead.
In my dynasty rankings, I haven't finished my projections yet. I haven't fully updated my dynasty rankings. I kind of want to wait till. Get all those target shares equaled out, then kind of put it all together and make some drastic changes. But I have all three of the 49ers receivers outside the top four. I think part of that is just, again, the quantity of all of them together makes it so that I'm hesitant to really truly invest in one. And I guess Jennings I have at 48. So that's the one who kind of matches his price. I think
Yeah.
Where he's at, probably, like, that does feel like a good value for Price, but it's also maybe not a huge steal.
Yeah.
He did miss two games, by the way. I did look at it while you guys
were talking. Okay, so not many.
Yeah.
No, and Rocky, I think, just said it so perfectly. He is wide receiver 28, which is great if you drafted him as wide receiver 56 and got ridiculous value. But now that he's being priced kind of, you know, generally.
Wide receiver 3-ish, yeah.
Yeah, that doesn't make it as attractive. And by the way, he goes to Seattle in his first game against Witherspoon and all those DBs. So he's probably going to have a tough game to start. So who knows? I think the Niners are actually probably one of the most interesting teams in terms of fantasy this year, because when you mix in McCaffrey and can Kittle do it again, and can Purdy do it without like ridiculous amounts of help? And I guess he still has it, but it's, and who will step up in Debo's role? It's an interesting offense. And if Pearsall can take the second step and this, that, and the other. All right. Now the sad one, Quinshon Judkins. After I took him at 102 in like four different places, he has been arrested for domestic violence and battery charge. Again, I will promote this anytime we talk about one of these stories. Drew Davenport's one of the best in the game. Go read his tweets, his I don't know if he writes actual articles, but he does these big threads where he explains all the different outcomes. So one thing to highlight here that Jamie Eisenberg brought up on CBS, I think it was yesterday, most second round picks have not been signed yet due to the whole Jaden Higgins thing. So it's kind of a weird what if. Like, what if Cleveland just says we're good here? They don't have to sign him. They're not required to. And it's one of those, you know, weird contract things. But we'll go to questions real quick. Dynastud said, pick your fighter for 2025, Jerome Ford or Dylan Sampson. The talk I've seen has leaned Sampson, but I think Ford is being disrespected. Am I crazy for thinking a low DC rookie doesn't immediately take over for a solid vet because reasons? And then Jonathan Smith says, are you buying, selling, or holding Judkins amidst this news? So, Kyle, let's start all again. Here we go, from the top. Quinshon Judkins, are you buying, selling, or holding on this news?
Yeah, so it's funny because we talked about this trade on the Dynasty Six Pack a couple weeks ago. It was a salary cap contract league, and it was like three different trades where I kept moving. I think I went from 106 to 105, and I went 106 to 104 to 107, then to 105. And I did like all this complicated stuff just to move up one spot. And like that, you know, I think I gave up 2 seconds, but I got back 3/3 was the kind of, I gave up the picks of the seconds, but I got at more picks back than what I gave up. So it all kind of made it worth it to me to all move up one spot and go from what I would have been taking Quinshon Judkins at 106, because after the NFL draft, I did have him ranked ahead of Travion Henderson. And my thinking was, as much as I like Jerome Ford, I think Stevenson is better than Ford, and he's a bigger hurdle.
Sampson.
No, I mean Stevenson.
Ramondre, I'm sorry.
Like Travion Henderson being like why I had
Judkins. Oh, I see. Henderson. I apologize.
I think Stevenson would have been a bigger, especially like the contract the Patriots just gave him. They gave him a 3-year extension. He catches a lot of passes. He does some of the goal line stuff. Ford is a really good pass catching back, but I also thought the opportunity was there immediately for Judkins to lead the team in carries and be the primary touchdown getter, goal line guy. So from that perspective, man, I'm really happy I dodged all of Quinshon Judkins, because I was ranking him pretty highly, but I also didn't end up having a lot of 105s, 106s. And that was just one league where Hunter fell further than I expected. So I moved all that just to avoid Judkins and get Travis Hunter. Because, man, talk about opposite reactions. When Hunter got drafted, it was the story of, oh, he helped that old lady on the plane. Like, yes. It seems like two completely opposite humans.
He's sober, he's married. It's like all the good things. Yeah, right.
So as someone who doesn't have any Judkins at all, I don't feel like I want to buy him because of this, even though it would be in theory cheaper than it might have been before. But the problem is, like, I'd be okay if you had a late rookie draft and he fell far enough in the rookie draft to draft him. But the problem is, like, everyone who's already drafted him, you've spent 2025 picks on him. I don't want to go and spend a 2026 pick on him. Like, it's, to me, it's almost too late, right? Like, if you didn't get any rookies in the pick, don't trade next year's picks to get some exposure to these rookies.
So yes.
I don't have a really strong inclination to want to buy him personally. If anything, this is making me maybe want to buy Jerome Ford. And I think as I think it's Dynasty Stud.
Dynasty Stud.
What a great name. Gotta love puns. They mentioned that Samson's getting most of the hype. So Samson's probably the one from this that increases the most in value. So Ford's probably not going to be much more expensive than he was last week. So he's probably the better one to go buy, if anything. That's the action there. Because, I mean, I thought it the whole time that he might still be the main third down back anyway. Mm-hmm. But now it seems like that, not only that, but he probably is in line to see a lot of carries. And, I mean, maybe Judkins plays most the entire year and doesn't miss a single game. Like that's still a possibility, too.
Oh, of course. And, yeah, this could all be nothing at some point. But I don't want to say nothing, but NFL's weird about stuff like this. It's usually hit or miss. So,
it's such an inconsistent history with different things. And
It's crazy. Rocky, two direct questions. Would you trade a 26 first for Judkins right now and Ford or Samson if you had to buy one?
Ford, first of all, because I don't, like the question says, lower draft capital rookies, I believe it when I see it. I know some people are going to love Dylan.
I think he was fifth.
They watched his tape and they thought he was amazing. But Jerome Ford's actually done it in the NFL, not at an elite level, but at a certainly reasonably productive level for an NFL team. So I think he's going to get more opportunity, and I have more belief that he'll capitalize on it. What was the other question?
Would you trade a 26 first for Judkins?
Oof. I did draft Judkins in a league the day this news came. It's a home league.
Yeah.
I think he went to 107. So I'm okay spending the equivalent of the 107. So is that I would guess that's probably
26
first.
Yeah.
So I guess I would say yes, but I'm not really dying to do it. Like, you know, with the news out there now.
I'd prefer him to be signed. Rather,
I don't think that what you said, that suggestion you made at the beginning, I don't think that's going to happen.
I don't think so either, but it's a funny, it's not funny, but it's a weird, kooky kind of like time overlap that this happens before he signed. So we've never really seen that before.
And I tend to think at least this year, this is not going to even matter. I don't think he's going to get suspended. A lot of times with these things, if they ever become a thing, it's not until the following year.
Yeah.
Jordan Addison's first court date was yesterday or today or something.
It got pushed already. I was going to put it on the news, and then it's pushed to like the end of this week. And Davenport said not to really pay attention because there's like jury selection and all this other crap that has to happen. So it's weeks away before we hear about Addison.
I'm going to be honest. It took me even a minute to remember what you guys were even talking about.
It's from like 3 years ago.
I know. That's what I'm saying. That's my point. So
when he fell asleep at LAX.
I don't want to belittle, you know, the potential domestic abuse. But just from our perspective, in terms of talking about the fantasy aspect of it, I just feel like until I don't even think this is going to be a thing until next year in terms of his playing time. And until we get more information, I'm not really letting it affect too much on how I felt on him one way or the other. Yeah. I guess I would probably say more of a hold to that last question. Just because, you know, you're not going to sell them because, if anything, people are going to want them for less. And I don't think most people who drafted them are just going to be like, oh, I got to get rid of them now just because this just came out the other day. So I would say hold.
Well, and I also wonder how many people are really willing to buy him. Like you said, Rocky, someone will buy it if it's so cheap. But
Someone offered me.
Why take the risk at I don't think there's a ton of risk, at least right now, but why take the risk at normal, you know, face value that you,
Like, I would say if you have him, now's the time, not like probably shouldn't be selling him now, but it's also partially because there's probably no one that really wants to buy him for the actual price. Yep. There's some people that might just, I might've been willing to pay the price on him in theory, but like anything domestic violence, automatic, no, I don't want them on my team. That does exist. And unfortunately, if you're one of those people who have him, you might, like, if you really want to get rid of him, you might have to sell him super cheap. That's to each manager to decide, like, what's it worth to hold him.
Right.
And I also, I was just thinking too about this as we were talking about it. Like, on a rookie like him that I drafted, like if you drafted him mid first round, I don't want to just trade him for a first anyway. I want a first plus at this point if I'm going to get rid of him, because I just spent a first and he could increase in value. Why do I want to give him away for a first a year from now? Like, why do I want to wait a year to get what I was hoping to get out of Judkins, you know, this year?
Well, right. I guess my one pushback to that all the time is that you're waiting a year to make the pick. But that, if you sell Judkins now for a 26 first, at some point in the season, you could trade that 26 first and get a better player than Judkins.
Yes.
And like that could be a more impactful year lineup. Right. So
you don't know what kind of player Judkins is, potentially a better player.
For sure. but I'd probably do it. If I had Judkins right now and someone was offering me a first out of it, I'd probably take it right now, bank that first, and then in season, when I'm ready to spend that first, I'll buy whatever player I want. It doesn't have to be a rookie necessarily.
Yeah. I just went and checked. It was in Tecmo Bowl, which is a dynasty league Rocky and I are both in, and I was offered Matthew Golden for Judkins, and I didn't even consider it. I passed on it. And I, you know, at my core, I'm a Packers hater, obviously from Chicago, but I also just don't like the offense. And it was an easy no for me. And I know that was probably a heat check by whoever that was, just to see if I was nervous, which obviously do. Like, go check and make sure no one's sweating in your leagues. But like, there might be some very quick no's.
I think, like, in principle, it's a first-round drafted wide receiver, right? Yes. So, and it's an offense you might hate, but that over the last couple of years has put up a lot of points. So,
yes,
in theory, it's like the ingredients of something you'd want. The problem is Matthew Golden's collegiate profile is awful. So just because he's a first-rounder, just because the Packers were stupid enough to take him in the first round. And yeah, I'm a Packers fan. I love the Packers.
Oh, okay.
Gutekunst, like, he's got a – Brian Gutekunst probably checks the RAS relative athletic score site more than anyone. He's an NFL GM. He loves drafting off athletic traits. And that seems like because I think there was the talk of, did Golden really run that 4.2 or like 4.29 or whatever it was? Because like some of you are saying he looked surprised. He didn't run it again. And like, I think he didn't want to give any reason to think that was an illegitimate time. Yep. And if you come back and you run a 4.39, and people are like, okay, that first was clearly false, right?
Yes.
You fooled Gutekunst because he went right for it. But if this was Emeka Egbuka, I'm probably taking it. Because that's a first-round receiver whose production profile I actually believe in. And I know just in my rookie rankings, that was a change I made, and I dropped Judkins all the way out of the first round to the 13th overall. And maybe that's just like a weird stance to take that, okay, now he's no longer a first rounder with this risk. But I'm thinking of it, like, who did I have as that first guy in the second round? It was debating between Caleb Johnson and Egbuka. And it's like, okay, Caleb Johnson, one round later than Judkins, with all the drama of Judkins right now, is that second rounder versus third rounder in the NFL really worth it? In my calculus, I'm saying no, I'd rather have Johnson at this point. So that's a guy that he's moved below. And then I look at Egbuka and that's, yes, it's a crowded spot. It's also an offense that produced a lot of points last year. So crowded spot. One of our biggest things we've done so wrong in Dynasty is, oh, crowded spot with wide receivers. You know, CeeDee Lamb, well, that was a crowded spot with Cooper and Gallup. And, man, how and far gone they are.
Yeah, right.
A.J. Brown, right? So we shouldn't be discounting Egbuka just because there's other good receivers in Tampa. We've fallen into that trap too many times. So at this point, if it was Egbuka instead of Golden, I'd take it because that is a profile I do.
Yeah. In case
now, to me, it's the second rounders that I really believe in. That's because I really believe in Jaden Higgins. I liked his production profile from before. And same with Luther Burden. I was debating him and McMillan as the wide receiver one before the draft. So like those guys are Judkins. Like right now I do have Judkins still higher, but if I was in that position right now and I might make an emotional decision to just get out of Judkins for those guys that I do believe in just as much as Judkins.
Yeah.
They're also at a position where, again, wide receiver, you take away some running back risk to go to a receiver. So I don't hate what that person did to try and see like, what's your risk reward, just on Judkins, but running back to wide receiver as well. So
in case the Tecmo guys are listening, I'm going to hold on Judkins right now. I'm not going to get off. I'm going to ride the train for a little bit longer, and I'll probably make the mistake of holding too long, but I'd rather ride the party out and see what happens. All right, we'll burn through the last couple bits of news since it's all kind of minor stuff. Garrett Wilson, 4-year, $130 million extension, $90 million guaranteed. Sauce also got an extension. I forget his number, but it was a lot. And, you know, we'll see if Breece is next. That would be the end of the class. It would be his turn to get extended. So we'll see. We'll get on Garrett Wilson and the Jets in a little bit. Jacob Robinson at The Athletic said to expect an offense-heavy start for Travis Hunter. That's good. Najee Harris, eye injury on the 4th of July. This is just out there because the internet ran with it. He's fine. It sounds like he's going to be there for camp and everything. He'll be ready to go. And then Tristan Wirfs will start the season on the PUP list with a knee injury. I don't normally put offensive linemen in the news unless it's guys like Tristan Wirfs, because this will matter for the Bucs for the first couple of games, for guys like Bucky and Baker and all the receivers. So
I will say with Bucky,
yes,
does it affect him the less in theory? Because with those inside runs, you're relying so much on the guards and the centers to make those first contacts that if anyone does this, are they maybe so afraid to rely on the pass game too much that they overuse the run game?
My pushback would be White could catch more out of the backfield because Baker's got to move faster. And
yeah,
Bucky could, like, because Bucky does off tackle and stuff like that too. And,
yeah, there were some outside runs last year. Yeah. He did start to catch more passes as the season went on. Mm-hmm. So I think if they know they're going to be dumping off a lot, you feel like Bucky's still going to be out there on third downs getting receptions.
Yeah.
Well, one of the reasons.
Maybe the snaps early in the season do start like close to 50-50 because of
that. Yeah.
And one of the reasons I loved him, and I think Russ loved him too, is that he had like a 75 catch season in college or something like that. So he can definitely be the guy they're dumping stuff off to.
Such revisionist history. I was on that show with the two of you. I was on the draft show, and I also liked Buggy. It's such revisionist history by you. All right, Kyle, this is where we let the guests choose. Would you like to do listener questions or trade X trades?
I guess I should look at the trade addicts trade. I kind of was going to let them be surprised. There are some pretty interesting ones here.
I actually just added one during the show that I happened to catch in my email. But yeah, so that one is.
Go through those.
Sure.
You want to do the trade first?
It's funny. But yeah, let's go through the three right. TA trades, even though it doesn't look like any of them are in TA3.
There we go. Trade X leagues are 12 team Superflex PPR tight end premium with 1.75 per tight end reception, 0.05 per return yard. In all leagues except TA1, because they'll never break, they always hold. And we don't have any TA1 trades. So the first one is in TA8. We have the aforementioned Brandon Ayuk for Jack Besh. Kyle? What
my rankings say, yeah. Actually, man, I hate Jack Besh. To me, Jack Besh is Jalen Polk, right? It's Tyquan Thornton, Sky Moore, these second-round picks that have
Zach Reed could hear
horrible,
you
horrible profiles. Right, like horrible production profiles. Yeah, and again, numbers versus tape.
Yes.
Maybe you don't watch enough wide receiver tape.
Yes.
But to me, Besh just didn't produce in college at all. Okay, yeah, he did well at the Senior Bowl. The practices matter more for coaches than the actual game in the Senior Bowl. So the fact that he caught a winning touchdown in the Senior Bowl, really, like, I don't enter that into my profile at all. Yeah, he's a second rounder, but like we've been smart at sometimes fading these early draft capital. So I'm going to rely on the numbers profile and say Jack Besh is getting way overdrafted. He should be a third round pick in rookie drafts. And I mean, he's universally been a second. I've seen his like points where he's going ahead of a Trey Harris or going ahead of a Jaden Higgins. And it just doesn't make any sense.
I agree with that.
I'll take Ayuk. I'll take the injury risk because we've seen him be elite before. I think at some point he'll get back to that. I think Jack Besh is hard pressed to ever be. To what Ayuk is.
I'm with Kyle. I never got the whole Jack Besh thing, even back during when we were doing rookie drafts right at the weekend. Like, I feel like it's just because he was, like Kyle said, he was drafted in the second, and they don't have a lot at receiver. But, like, that doesn't make him good. So, I would rather just take the guy. Again, I know the injury risk. Most of the time these guys come back healthy eventually. I don't know exactly what Ayuk's age is right now, but it's still
like 26.
Yeah, that's what I thought, mid to late 20. It's not like he's approaching
30. He's not 30 something. Yeah. No.
So I think he's still got multiple good years ahead of him, and I can't say that about Jack Besh.
Yes.
Even if it's not this year, for Ayuk.
What guys like Zach Reed will tell you is, and I remember talking about this, is when Jack Besh was at LSU before he went to TCU, he outplayed and had better stats in an LSU offense that had Malik Nabers and Kyron Lacy, who, rest in peace, isn't going to be coming out, but he would have been a first-round pick, you know, in a very, very good offense, and that he stood out. So I get that. I would also take Ayuk, that all that said, but I think people fall in love with Besh's tape more than the numbers, and I think that's what Kyle just said. It's like, you know, there's different ways of analyzing things. And I kind of do neither, to be honest with you. I am very, like, eye test. I just watch college football, and, you know, like, speaking of which, I'm in the Tadpole Bowl right now, which we'll get into maybe at the end, but, like, I just watch college football and I kind of see these guys play along the way. But I think Besh is a tape guy. I think if the people who watch a lot of tape like Besh, and I think that's where the appeal is, right? But I would also take Ayuk.
Because the reports out of the Senior Bowl seem positive. It wasn't just that he caught the touchdown at the end of the game. Like, like him during practices. But, like, I don't watch college football at all. I had no idea Jack Besh even went to LSU, and I kind of forgot that he went to TCU. But now that you mentioned that, like, not the helmet scout, but isn't that the school, like, we should just absolutely avoid with every wide receiver? Like, it never works out. As much as this is the guy.
Jalen Reagor.
Went to TCU.
Yeah.
So
That's a good point. Yeah.
Where's this production, though? Because, like, you said he outproduced Nabers, but I'm looking his best and from Peter Howard. So we're going Zach Reed to Peter Howard, the yin and the yang. His literally single season best receiving yards per team pass attempt is 2.12. That's horrible.
Okay, maybe it was just looked better than. I can't remember his exact thing. I don't want to outspeak
for him. I shouldn't say that's horrible. That's not that bad. It's way better than Matthew Golden ever did for his.
Yes, exactly.
It's a far cry from, like, I remember Nabers had looking at the stats last year. I think he had like a single season receiving yards per team pass attempt of like 3.2 or 3.3, just ridiculous. Like, guys don't usually hit that ever. So.
I'm laughing because Kyle said all the TCU wide receivers don't do very well. Who did the Packers take again in the fourth round?
Third round, actually. Savion.
Third round. Yeah, Savion. So.
Oh, well. And don't even get me started on him. Okay, you want to rant? They have, like, the draft, like, it seemed like the draft wasn't even done. Like, they hadn't even done day three of the draft yet, and they were already talking about, oh, yeah, he's probably going to fit multiple positions. And
yeah.
Like, why? Is it because he's not good at a receiver? And the only way you can justify
he's going to do everything.
If you're just judging him based on him being a receiver relative to the other guys there, he's probably not better than Malik Heath. He's probably not making this team just as a receiver. So he's got to hold all these different special roles. Oh, if this happens, he can be our Ty Montgomery.
Yes.
When they drafted Ty Montgomery, they never had any intention of ever playing him as a running back. Like, that was never even a thought. It was, we're drafting him because he's an excellent kick returner. And if he can ever contribute as receiver, Ty Montgomery might pay off. And then one year, all the running backs got hurt. Lacy got hurt. James Starks got hurt. Even one of the practice squad guys got hurt to the point where they just, well, Ty Montgomery, if you think you can do it, you're becoming a running back this year. But it was totally mid-season shift that was never planned. So, like, for them to already be planning that for Savion Williams, that's not a good sign. If you can, like, man, he could play this position. Sounds to me like he can't play any position. You're just, like, grasping at straws. So why draft him in the third round? Also, Packers third rounders are usually horrible. Yeah. Like, Gutekunst is – Tucker Kraft is a massive exception. And we have Sean Ryan, who was the starting right guard all of last year. But since Gutekunst has been on the team since 2017, those are the only two third-round picks that have actually hit. And I think the third best is Jashiah DeGuara. Do you guys know who Jashiah DeGuara is?
He was a receiver, wasn't he?
Tight end.
Tight end. Yeah.
He played more snaps at fullback than he actually did at tight end. Yeah, occasionally caught some passes, but and he made it through his rookie contract. He was on the Packers for 4 years, and then they let him go because he wasn't really worth keeping around. That's the third best third round pick they've made. Because most of the time it's Amari Rodgers that they're cutting halfway through their second season. So the fact that he's a Packers third round receiver, the fact that he's a TCU receiver, just avoid Savion Williams. Just wasted we talk roster cloggers. Savion Williams is like the biggest roster clogger in this draft.
Yeah,
him and Isaac Tesla. Like, I don't, fun. Because we've seen the Lions do this before. Just randomly take some third-round player way higher than we expect. And no idea who this guy even is. Oh, and they either play running back or receiver.
Yep.
And they're just a special teams guy that does nothing for the offense. It was Jason Huntley a couple years ago.
Something like
he was
that,
a running back that I'd never heard of. He went in the third round. And like, I don't even think he's on the team anymore. And that was like 2 years ago, maybe. So like Tesla and Williams, like to me, the two biggest roster cloggers in this draft. Just avoid them at all costs. They like, trade the pick. If you want to draft them, trade the pick for a 28. You will eventually get more value out of that fourth. You can throw it into a trade somewhere over the next 3 years, and that'll give you more value than Savion Williams. Sorry, Packers rant over.
Two takeaways from that rant. One, I took Isaac Tesla with my last pick in Scott Fishbowl today. And two, I hate James Starks as a Bears fan because he was so much better than Lacy, and it was so obvious most of the time, but they never used him. But when they did, he was always fresh, so that was very annoying to watch as a Bears fan. All right, before we get to the rest of the trades, I completely missed Roman's question in the chat. He said he got an 22nd and 26th for Samson. I would take Samson, probably, but I don't like it.
I mean, he was probably a third rounder in the draft. So you're not only getting back to the third rounder plus a second on top, like in terms of you've like if Samson does nothing else, you've already profited.
Right.
So you can exit out of the profit now. What if he's the lead back for the Browns, not only this year, but long term?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to maybe be able to get a lot more. So at this point, with everything going, it's a tempting offer, but I think I would hold just on the off chance that this offer could be bigger once the season starts.
If you're trading for Samson, Roman, I would take the deal. If you're getting Samson in that deal.
I'll take the picks.
Of course you will. All right.
Basically, for what Kyle said, that you're already profiting. That's basically what I would take.
Hockey's going to take the 22nd and 26th and turn it into Kirk Cousins. All right. Ladd McConkey and Bucky Irving for Evan Engram. TA11.
The other question I was going to ask about this is,
yes,
as soon as I see unbalanced on either side, how many starters are there? Is it uniform across all the TA leagues?
Man.
Yeah, it's 10 starters. Yeah.
So you're right.
32-man rosters. Yeah,
12 teams start 10. You're almost right in the middle. Any fewer starters than that, and you're probably smashing the McConkey side of just the second starter doesn't matter. Like, give me just the best asset. But as soon as you start getting to start 11, start 12, then you're almost always taking the two. Like, starters are so valuable. You need so many of them. So being a 10, you're like right in the middle.
It's tough.
I'm tempted to take the two and say Irving and Engram, knowing the format. That it's tight end premium.
It is 10 Engram, to confirm.
You know, Ingram's, especially if you don't have a solid tight end and you like this is maybe a really cheap way to get a tight end almost thrown in, right? Like you're downgrading the long term value of a wide receiver to a running back, but I mean, it's not out of the question. Bucky Irving outscores Ladd McConkey this year.
No, definitely not.
So especially if you're a contending team, this makes a lot of sense to go.
Yes.
Engram, rebuilder, I could see why you wouldn't want to trade away a receiver like that for a running back. So I could understand as a rebuilder why you'd be hesitant. If it was another receiver instead of Irving and Engram, that might make sense, like tear down at wide receiver. If you're a rebuilder trying to think of the side. But yeah, I think just at face value, I'm overconfident. I always tend to think I can win. I'd probably take Irving and Engram.
I lean the Irving and Engram side, too. We are a very pro-Irving, pro-Engram podcast, though. And I like both a lot this year. I also – I don't know what it is. I have nothing factual, no statistics or anything to back this up. I just – something about Ladd McConkey, I don't
– We talked about this last week when you were out. Zach Berger and I did, and – I guess he kind of convinced me into putting him kind of higher than he was. Like I said, he might bust this year. Cause I did it off a tweet. I think it was Laquan Jones said it. And did Ladd hit his peak? And there's so many reasons, and go listen to the show last week. I'm not going to remember them all, but like why Ladd can repeat and, or do better than last year. And
there are that, I realize that I still
can't, I know I don't buy it either.
Buy in.
I think it's Zach Reed and Ari are telling us about Trey Harris, but that's fine. And I think, look, I get the trade. I actually do. I would take Bucky just because I like Bucky, and you get Ingram on top. But
I think it seems
like you're getting a 22-year-old receiver.
Yeah, it could, one's contending, one's rebuilding is what it seems like. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad price to give up if you believe in McConkey. I just don't feel like I believe in McConkey as much as other people do.
I agree.
So yeah, I really didn't like him before the draft. Again, back to production profiles, right? Yep. Like, he really didn't produce in college. And like, you wanted to tell me, okay, Brock Bowers took everything and no one else could, but like, it seemed like he was having a hard time just getting on the field. Like, he wasn't playing a lot of snaps. Like, the Georgia coaching staff just viewed these other receivers as better worthy of being out there over McConkey. And then, I mean, they won a national championship, so they clearly were doing something right. But then when you see how good he was in the NFL last year, it makes you think, why didn't Georgia use him more? Clearly, like, were those other guys really better than him?
So, also, Carson Beck isn't very good, and we're going to learn that this year at Miami. So
I will also say it kind of
complete 360 all the same.
It kind of falls in a very different way, but sort of similar to the Juwan Jennings thing to me, in that he went so far beyond our expectations that I think it makes him even more valuable to some people, or more hyped to some people. Like, he's wide receiver. And again, this is fantastic for a rookie. I'm not trying to take away from that. Like, he had 82 for 1,100 yards or something like that. I was just looking. But he's still like wide receiver 22 in points per game, which is great for a rookie. You love to get that out of a rookie. And the idea is that he will be better than that going forward. Like, you know, if he did that in his rookie season. I understand all that. I do worry what you were saying a little while ago. That did we see peak Ladd McConkey? And it's kind of like, you know what it reminds me a little bit of? I always said Chris Olave was always going to be a wide receiver too. And I feel like Ladd McConkey is always going to be a wide receiver too.
We have him
ranked like ADP wise as a low end wide receiver one value wise. And I don't know if I buy that.
Yeah.
It's certainly possible he never has this good of a season. This could have been it. You had to capture it. But
yep.
I will say what they did kind of was sustainable to a certain extent.
I am totally ready to be proven wrong. This is mostly just, like I said, I don't have anything like super in like great argument to back it up. It's more just gut thing for me. But like, even just looking at the situation, I mean, a lot of people do like Trey Harris, but he still, in theory, could command a ton of targets there with the way their receiver room is set up. And he's still got a good quarterback. Like, there's all reasons to believe in him. I think I need to see it one more year before I buy in.
Yeah.
And we're talking about top 12 wide receiver prices, right?
Like, you
could still buy A.J. Brown for that price. Year in, year out, and points per game-wise, he's a lot closer to Jefferson and Chase than McConkey is.
I think we could talk about McConkey for 2 hours and land at the same place, so we'll move on for now. I think he's one of the most polarizing people in the dynasty space. And I think he's fascinating because you could make literally six arguments for anything, right? Because I was just looking at his Georgia stats. He wasn't very good at Georgia. He had like 800 yards receiving at Georgia. In his best
total, his best career. That was actually for you. Okay, I thought that was his whole career.
No, that was and that was with Bennett playing quarterback. With Beck, I think he got hurt though. But like, Beck's not very good. I'm just gonna say that Carson Beck is gonna get first round hype this year at Miami. He's not very good. It's not gonna go very well. But I'll rail against Carson Beck for again 2 hours. So we'll move on. All right, last one. Dak Prescott and Brian Robinson for Xavier Worthy in a 26 first. Rocky, where is the first? Because I think that matters.
You're going to have to give me a second to get that because I wasn't prepared for that question. I can.
Let's pretend it's mid for now.
Yeah. Yeah, I always tend to do that at the start. I mean, the first thing, it's always, again, structure of deals, right? When you're dealing with quarterback trades, value is less important than, okay, what's my quarterback room like and what am I getting back? So I see one quarterback on one side and none on the other. That does kind of pique my interest to that side already. Like, forget Brian Robinson. If you really need a quarterback, worthy in a first, but like that might be what you're willing to
pay. I was just going to say that.
You're that desperate. So as much as, you know, I look at this and something doesn't belong in it. I like Brian Robinson, but from a dynasty value perspective, he is of the four, the fourth most valued asset by a long margin. I think that's like the gap between him and whatever you view as the third best asset is probably the biggest gap.
I will say looks mid to maybe late. If this team was the fourth seed last year, and looking at it, the team, I would say it's no worse than that this year.
And it's going to get worse now, right? Because you're giving Dak Prescott to that team.
Yes, they gave up their own pick. Like that's not always right. Necessarily the case that but that now, pick belonged to the team that was trading it. But in this case, it is. So they are getting
Dak Prescott. They had where they feel like they can absorb. It's a pretty solid QB.
We're asking Rocky to do a lot.
The team that got Dak has Burrow and Rodgers.
Sheesh.
And Kirk from Cousins that perspective, I can definitely see why you'd give up a first to go.
Absolutely. And
the team that traded Dak, it looks like they are majorly rebuilding.
Okay, so this makes sense.
Their only quarterback really is Trevor Lawrence. I mean, they have a few other guys, but they're like backups and stuff.
Russ would be so mad at me for adding context to all this stuff.
By the way. I know.
Well, yeah.
So it looks like it's basically a rebuild thing. He wants to get rid of the 30-something-year-old
which I get.
Quarterback.
I'll take the Dak side. Yeah.
That's kind of how I was leaning too. Maybe we're too obsessed with quarterbacks. Maybe that's why Scott Fish made the Scott Fish Bowl studies like this. So we got out of our head.
Yeah.
It's not all about the quarterbacks, folks.
Yeah.
I'm not as obsessed with quarterbacks, but that's true. I think I still lean Dak in this situation here. Yeah. And this, even just value wise, I think he's worth a little over 26 first and Xavier Worthy's worth more than Brian Robinson, but I think it's kind of evening out, and you add the positional value of the quarterback in. I think I would give the Dak sign.
And the usual thing with Rocky is he'll never have Lamar Jackson or Josh Allen. You prefer to always tear down a quarterback.
Or turn Josh Allen into two quarterbacks.
I actually have one league where I do have Josh Allen, and I keep meaning to try and trade him, and I never get what I think is enough.
You know, and that's good. The discipline to hold and the patience. Yes. Even though you want to make a move. Knowing the purpose of the move,
I would if someone would buy what I think are Josh Allen prices.
That's the problem,
Josh Allen, but they're not.
But yeah, is Dak gotten so cheap that he is now in the range that Rocky is typically shopping for quarterbacks? Like he's one of your targets because he's
also a Cowboy, which doesn't help.
I don't care about that when it comes to
it's funny from a huge market standpoint. They typically they're viewed as the team that we might. The general community might raise a Cowboy player higher because it's, Dak versus a comparable quarterback on a really bad team. I'm having a hard time thinking it because the problem with Dak is if you look at the top 25, 26 quarterbacks in Dynasty, he's by far the oldest. Anyone older than him, we treat them like lepers almost. They're so far down the rankings, maybe a Stafford or a Geno, right? Those would maybe be the next highest up, but
yeah.
So Dak is so hard to place in Dynasty, right? Because it doesn't feel like he belongs. Wherever he is, he should be in a tier of his own almost. It's so hard to figure out where is that placement.
Right.
But some people might value him so low that it's the perfect spot where Rocky wants to shop.
I was just curious when you said that. He's QB 18 in DLF ADP. He's 31. And there's no one older than him above him. The only other two guys that are 30 above him are Goff at 17 and Mayfield at 12. Everyone else is in their 20s.
I've got Dak ahead of Goff.
I would rather have Dak too.
Goff's too old to be considered younger than Dak, even if he's a couple years younger. I mean, they were in the same draft class, weren't they? They both that 2016 draft class.
Dak and Goff, yes,
they were.
Zeke at four, and then they were. And
Dak
then
in the fourth.
Fourth, yep.
But so, to me, Goff's age doesn't really matter. They've been in the NFL for the same number of years, especially quarterback age. So, I wouldn't really view that as getting an advantage of getting Goff. Give me Dak's points. I agree. QB 18 is too low. He gets too disrespected. I still have Dak ahead of Caleb Williams and Drake May in my dynasty. Those guys, I feel and we're going to talk about this on Dynasty Court Dynasty six pack, I think next week, but
yeah.
Didn't May score like 13 points per game last year? Like, where is this hype for Drake May?
The hype on him is so high.
Oh, he's an automatic top 10 quarterback. Why? And yeah. I mean, if you take out, because I think there were two games he played with that they count as his points per game, but he barely played. He got one, I think he got hurt immediately, and the other one was week 18, and you know, one drive, and oh, it's Joe Milton, so he barely did anything. So even if you take those games out, I think it went up to 16 points a game, which is good, but the way he's being ranked is like a top eight quarterback in Dynasty. People, like, it seems like people think he ran over 20 points, and he's just like, oh, it rushed for 700 yards. I hear that, like, the rushing upside with him is insane. And like, he ran a little bit, but he didn't run like that much. So I don't know. Like, May's a guy that I think you're overhyped on. Mm-hmm. I would love to sell Drake May for Dak Prescott plus. You could do that
at this
point right now. Any of these like younger quarterbacks, you could probably get a big plus added. Get the older guy, but get probably a more productive guy. You know, get draft picks attached to Dak Prescott. You know, sell Caleb Williams or Dak in a second. Even if you're a contender, use that second to go buy another player. And you've just not only increased your scoring at one position, but maybe even help yourself at another position.
Yeah, I was looking at this again because it was so – Kyle got this in my head with the age thing. Like, I don't think – I know Dak is older, but I don't think of him as old.
He's hurt a bunch, too. He had, like, his leg, but his foot come off, and, you know.
There's only two – I'm just scrolling through the DLF because they have the ages right there. There's only two quarterbacks you might expect to start beyond this year that are older than Dak, which is wild to me. Like, he's only 31 – but the only other ones are Stafford, and that's questionable, but he's good enough. And Geno Smith, just because of his contract. The only other guys that are older that are starting at all are like Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, and Joe Flacco, potentially.
Yeah.
So it's crazy to me. Like 31, you wouldn't, and he could be like Stafford and then potentially play like be the guy that's playing at least 30. It's just, it was just wild to me just seeing how not old the quarterback position is right now, I guess.
Yeah. Well, it's weird because you think about like, okay, the Eli Manning, Ben Roethlisberger, Rivers draft,
right?
Rodgers goes the next year, and then it's a bit of a gap. Like, you had Matt Ryan a couple years later, and then, you know, Stafford the next year, but then you started getting quarterbacks that we thought were going to be those guys and then flamed out. And a lot of them have retired. Sam Bradford, Andrew Luck, Robert Griffin III. You have Russ. I think Tannehill was that year too. And then you move on to the next year was the Geno Smith, EJ Manuel year. Like every year, like you have these guys that you think are talented enough to make it into the elite tier, but really from Rodgers, we maybe had Stafford and Matt Ryan, and then it's a big gap until and Russ. But outside of those three, it's a big gap until we get to Mahomes in 2017. And then we started replenishing Mahomes that year, Josh Allen, Lamar the next year, Kyler the year after. Then we, like every year, we started seeing multiple quarterbacks that came in and real deals right away. So it was just that this big gap of there's a couple of years where it seemed like colleges were really having a hard time developing quarterbacks, because even the talented ones that came out, like a Sam Bradford, and maybe injuries had more to do with it than anything else, but just never hit on the promise. I mean, I was having this debate on another podcast, like, man, Stafford's viewed as this like real life NFL quarterback. We're getting way away from fantasy here, but was not that good in the Lions. Like, they never had success. The only time he's ever had success was with McVay spoon feeding him all these like easy layup throws to Cooper Kupp, and now we just view Stafford as this like, oh, amazing all-time great quarterback. But I mean, he had to, you know, he had all these receivers and all this talent around him, and they could never get it done in Dallas. They're Detroit. Same thing, Dallas, Detroit, I suppose. They should have beat Dallas in that one playoff game, but they didn't. There's the bad the PI call that was called, and then they picked up the flag, and then the Lions, you know, because football is all about response. Maybe this is the dynasty lesson here too, is to, something bad happens, don't compound the mistake immediately after, right? Like the Lions, it should have been a flag. The defense should have been off the field. The offense shouldn't have been off the field. It was pass interference against. We shouldn't be punting, but we're punting, and the punter punts it out of bounds, and Dallas gets the ball back. They good position. They score a touchdown. Game's over. So it's, you know, if something bad happens in dynasty, you make a bad trade. Don't compound that by further making a bad trade. So this is back to, we're still in the first question of dynasty trade principles here.
Yeah, I think I talk
a lot.
No, it's fine. I think one thing you said is Dak has to be in his own tier. And I've been sitting here thinking as you said one name, or Rocky said a name. I think Baker's in the same kind of tier where you don't know where to put him because he's 31 or 30. He's going to score a ton, and he's still not respected as the guy. Like, you know, he's not put in the same tier as Drake May and Caleb Williams. So I think Dak and Baker are kind of holding hands in the same little tier that floats around. And I think they're both interesting guys. So, all right,
let's, fair, because I do have them back to back. Baker's at QB 13, Dak at QB 14.
Yeah, I think that's right. So, and if you put Dak ahead of Baker, I think that's also right. Right, like they're the same. They're side by side.
And interestingly, he's six spots higher than Dak on,
which is on weird. DLF.
Yeah,
I just I don't know,
because he's had the, like, last year he was what, QB 5, QB 6.
Yes,
but we've seen Dak do that like three. I think he's got three top five finishes in his history, and then the injury shortened season 2020. I think he was the QB 1 points per game because they were on pace for like 700 attempts. So like the production's been wild from Dak. Yeah. But are we just concerned that it's not there? I don't know. Maybe I do still have two, even at QB 14, which seems higher than consensus. Maybe that's still too low for
Dak. Yeah. All right. Let's go to listener questions. Jonathan Smith, he asked his question about Judkins already, but his answer to my other question on favorite summer blockbuster, he said, as a kid, Star Wars, Raiders of the Lost Ark, and many others. As an adult, The Avengers, Captain America, Civil War, Top Gun, Maverick, and the new Superman, which I have not seen yet. I don't know if you guys have seen it yet. So Kyle, favorite summer blockbuster. Did you have one?
Well, so I remember when I first saw these questions on Twitter, I also saw one of the responses immediately, and it was, the first thing my mind always goes to is Star Wars usually, or Lord of the Rings, but all the Lord of the Rings movies came out like Christmas. So they weren't considered summer blockbusters. And lately Disney has been doing that with Star Wars. So
yes.
Since Disney's taken over, Star Wars has been more a
Christmas December thing. Yeah.
But George Lucas days, it was always in May and like just the very start of summer.
Yeah.
And I remember like the hype for when the prequel trilogies came out was huge. The Phantom Menace hype was crazy, but I was also while I was into the Star Wars hype, I didn't quite appreciate how hyped everyone really was. Because I mean, I just
when did Phantom Menace come out, by the way?
1999.
Okay. I was 22.
I had seen. You look so good for it. I didn't realize there was that big a difference. I had just seen the Star Wars movies, I think, 2 years before. So to me, there wasn't this like long absence of waiting, like almost 20 years for this to come out. But I remember Revenge of the Sith hype, 2005, when episode 3 came out. Like, to conclude the story, everyone, we're going to see Darth Vader and like, man, there's going to be some epic Obi-Wan Anakin battle. And so I remember that hype, Revenge of the Sith. I definitely remember watching like two or three times in theaters. So if there's one that came to mind, it's always that, the summer of Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah. Before Rocky answers, the reason I asked this question was because this week, I think it's this week, or it was around a documentary, is the 50th anniversary of Jaws coming out, which was like the original summer blockbuster. Some say it's still the greatest horror movie of all time, whatever. It's an animatronic shark. So like, you know, I don't do a lot of like shark movies or anything like that. I just, you know, too real for me, but
You don't watch Sharkacane or
no, Sharknado.
I was trying to make fun of that.
Yeah.
Sharkacane is definitely going to be a thing one of these days.
I know. We need Sharkacane.
Wouldn't that make more sense? Because like a tornado in the middle of the ocean, wouldn't that be a hurricane technically? So
there's nothing sense about a tornado of sharks. Right. So we just got to skip that past that part. Rocky, what was your kind of summer blockbuster you thought of?
So one came to mind initially for me, and it's going to date me a little more, pre-Kyle, definitely pre-Frank. And to me, it's the one that, like, I'm sure there were ones that were really big before this, but at least, you know, I was born in 77. It's the one I remember, first movie I really remember being this huge, giant event, and something you don't, even with these other movies Kyle's talking about being hyped, this you almost never see anymore, where people were lining up outside theaters to go see the movie. Russ is really going to appreciate this one because it's the Michael Keaton Batman. Which was also a great movie too.
Yeah.
But yeah, I remember that summer. Like, it was I went to go see it, and I had to wait in a long line just to get into the movie theater. It was ridiculous. So to get tickets or whatever, it was a huge event. Superhero movies, comic book movies weren't nearly the thing they are. You know, there's like one every 5 seconds nowadays. That was another huge thing. Like there had been Superman back in like the early 80s and a little bit here and there, but like this kind of, I think, revitalized the comic book movies too. So
yeah, for sure. For me, it's a lot of the Marvel stuff, like Avengers stuff like that. As I obviously wasn't alive when Jurassic Park came out, but as I got older, I really started to appreciate Jurassic Park movies. I watched the Jurassic World movies as they came out, like the summer blockbusters. I saw the new one. I won't spoil it, but
yeah,
not good. And so I think that's kind of the two main ones for me. Top Gun Maverick is weird because it was like the one that brought everyone out of COVID together, like, and it like was the first movie back in theaters and stuff like that. So I think that has a special place for me, but not like as a summer blockbuster, if that makes sense. It was like the first summer blockbuster out of hiding. I was scrolling through these, like Indiana Jones, all that stuff. Like, I wasn't alive for kind of these main ones. Like, I've appreciated them as movies now, but like as I've gone back, I was trying to find, like, I was scrolling through. Kyle said the Star Wars. That was definitely one, because I was kind of old enough. So I was born in 94. So I was old enough by the time the third one came out, Revenge of the Sith. I was starting to kind of treat that as summer blockbusters. The Pirates of the Caribbean movies were summer blockbusters back. I was looking at this IMDb list, which I sent Kyle. I probably should have sent Rocky, but he said he already had an answer. So the Pirates of the Caribbean movies are considered summer blockbusters. The Dark Knight movies are considered summer blockbusters.
That was the other one I was going to go to. Yeah.
Yep.
I remember. So, because we got the heat because Heath Ledger died. So it kind of
helped
fuel even more hype into that movie. Like, oh my God, we want to see his last performance. So,
yeah. That was one of my first midnight releases too. I saw it was The Dark Knight.
And I think that it had a different tone than other blockbusters, just a bit of somber tone because of his death. But
yeah. So I think we get to another thing we could talk about for 2 hours of summer blockbusters, but we'll keep going on to Dino Studs, rest of his questions. So he said for redraft, I get that the John Uchid killed both him and Friar Muth for this year. I don't know if you guys agree with that or not, because Rocky wasn't on for the John Uchid talk. Were you, or were you? Was that last week?
I think we talked about that 2 weeks ago.
Okay, good. Because I don't want to do it again. But if you're a rebuilder, isn't Freiermuth a solid buy? At least 60 catches in all of his healthy seasons, 7 touchdowns in year 2 and 3. He's still fairly young and probably escapes Jonnu and or Arthur Smith in 1 to 2 years. So, Kyle, are you buying Freiermuth if you're rebuilding and don't need points right now?
I'm pushing back on that last sentence. He just signed an extension. So that made this Jonnu Smith even more weird. Like, this is year one of his second contract with the Steelers.
I forgot that part then.
So it also makes it weird, right? Because
he could mean that Jonnu and Arthur Smith are gone in 1 to 2 years.
Oh, that's
not
true
that Freiermuth is.
Either way.
I'm still not convinced that like Freiermuth isn't the number two target on this team. Like, if their plan going into the year was probably to use the tight ends a lot, and then I guess Arthur Smith got there and they realized apparently he doesn't trust Darnell Washington, but they don't have that second tight end that they can use. But if you look at the team composition, the number two and number three target probably are going to be Jonnu Smith and Freiermuth, unless Aaron Rodgers really likes Robert Woods. If he really, really likes Robert Woods, okay, I could see that being the guy.
Robert Woods.
Well, I mean, but that's the thing, Rodgers. Whoever runs the routes the way he wants them to run.
He was still trying to make Alvin Lazard a thing. So
someone said Juwan Jennings should go to the Steelers, and that makes all the sense in the world.
You know what? Yes, that trade makes a lot more sense than what we saw here. That's for sure. So, you know, I love Freiermuth as a buy. I'm still considering him the number one tight end on the team. My touchdown projections and target share projections, he's higher than Jonnu in both. I don't want to get fooled again. I love Jonnu Smith. Crazy athletic ability. He's like George Kittle. He really is.
Yeah.
His ability, like, to, man, I could take I mean, we've seen Jashai Jaguar do that too. I can take a screen pass 80 yards for a touchdown. So apparently other tight ends can do it too, but Jonnu's done that kind of consistently throughout his career. So Sorokin, it's tough to do that consistently. 80-yard touchdowns aren't a thing you have every time. But
what if anyway, they just split Jonnu out? What if they just split him out as a receiver?
And I think do both of them have to be on the field, right? Like, because they really just don't have the weapons. They might as well just play both of them.
Yeah.
But when Jonnu and Hunter Henry both ended up in New England, Jonnu had the bigger contract, more per year, and it was a 4-year contract.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hunter Henry was the clear better producer the whole time.
Jonnu was a mega buy. I remember that kind of when he was.
And you look at Henry, he's nothing special as an athlete. No. Like he's all NFL players are special relative to us, but relative to other NFL players, he's average starting tight end in terms of athleticism. He's not like Jonnu and Kittle are, yet Hunter Henry was the one gaining targets. So just because we really like Jonnu's talent, I don't think means that Freiermuth is not going to get targeted. Because I've looked at Freiermuth's target share. It's been 13% every year of his career, or minimum. Like he's had years, I think, go up to 19%. Jonnu's had several seasons below 10%. So Freiermuth has like this solid baseline of this is the type of targets we expect him to get because he's done that every year of his career. So why would this year be any different? So I'm still buying Freiermuth as if he's the starting tight end because I don't think this has necessarily killed his value. So yeah, I love it as a rebuilder, but I'm okay buying Freiermuth super cheap as a contender too.
I struggle because Arthur Smith is literally like tight end kryptonite. And I agree with the thought that he could be gone from Smith in a year. Because if Tomlin's gone, so is Arthur Smith.
Oh.
And,
why is Tomlin gone? Where did this come from?
Because if they stink again, there's talks he's gonna actually be on the hot seat this year if they actually like have this 9-8 with a first round exit again, if they don't see real progress. So
was Chuck Knoll fired or did he also retire?
I was not alive.
Well, I don't think neither was I, but like,
I think he retired, the Steelers
haven't fired a head coach since like 1968. So no, why would they think they're getting rid of
Tower Tom? Retired.
I knew Tower retired. Chuck Knoll retired too. Knoll. Yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, this ownership has proved that if they believe in a guy, and he's already won them a Super Bowl. So as far as they're concerned, I think Tomlin's there as long as he wants to be there.
Bowl was 16 years ago.
But that this ownership group is almost patient to a fault, which, to be fair, so many ownership groups aren't. Like, so many ownership groups are the opposite. They're too impatient. The Steelers ownership brass clearly believe in what Tomlin has done.
Yeah.
It seems like they'll give him the rope. Like, I don't see any reason to think that they're just going to get rid of him, even after one bad season. Oh, no, we waited this long. One losing season, right? You can get this whole stretch without losing seasons, but you get one losing season, we're done. That doesn't really seem like the Steelers.
Reason I would disagree with that is because, and again, we're talking about the Steelers, for God's sakes, but like on a fantasy show, they look like they're unloading the clip this year. To like they're adding guys like Jalen Ramsey, they're adding aged Darius Slay, and you know, Rocky would probably be the first to tell you that Darius Slay is on the back nine of his career, but he's still got a couple of good games left. And I think they're going for it right now with Rodgers this 1 year. And if it doesn't work, then you have to blow it all up. You can't keep Tomlin and let him restart the whole build from the bottom again. I guess you could, but it would make sense to have a new guy and a new regime kind of start this at the bottom. Although they did just sign Amar Khan, I think, for another 3 years, who's their GM. So,
I mean, if you talk about what makes sense, is that you don't bank on Rodgers. You had two quarterbacks you could have extended last year.
Yes. So
the Steelers haven't necessarily been sensible. I mean,
that's true.
I guess, yeah, to me it feels like Freiermuth, to the point of the question, Freiermuth's more stable to be on that team longer.
Yes, I agree.
Because they traded for Jonnu, but I haven't heard any talk of an extension. Yeah. Right? Or, no, they did. Did they extend him? They did extend him. I can't remember. Did they?
To go back. Then all the extensions.
Also, I have confirmed that the Steelers have not fired a coach in 50 years.
It's just crazy.
One year, $12 million extension.
Yeah. But that's okay, so I don't know if that's for this year or if that's for another year on top of what he had. But they could that could have been a re-rack of his money or something like that.
Yeah, because I'm looking on SpoTrack and it has the cap hit at $4.09 million. So I assume this is for 2026
extension. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I think that's what it's saying. Yeah.
Yeah, they're just not showing the 2026 cap hit yet. But okay. So yeah. I mean, he's on the team 1 year, but like I said, I'm pretty sure Freiemuth. This is the first year of his 4-year extension. So
right.
He's probably destined to be on that team longer than Johnny, which to was the point of the question, right? Like, should we buy him hoping that it'll be better next year for Freiemuth? And I guess I'm just not convinced that it's going to be so bad this year, which right. means the dip, like, people might be hesitant to buy Freiemuth now because they're expecting, oh, this year's going to be so bad. He'll be so much cheaper next year. But what if that dip doesn't come? Maybe this right now is the cheapest Freiemuth's ever been. Because he certainly feels like he lost value in this trade. So now that this trade's happened, when was the last time he was this cheap? Probably before he was the start. So if you want to buy Freiemuth, this would be the buy low opportunity in theory. And technically, this could be a good buy low for Johnny. If you're convicted one way or the other that like this guy's clearly better than the other,
yes, you have
now's
to make
the time to buy.
Right. You have to pick one.
Or you don't have to. I mean, you could pick neither. Like, yes. I don't want to buy either of these.
But I'm saying don't get both. Yeah. Pick one or the other.
For sure, and you could split it. Like one team, I want to bet on Freiemuth, another team you bet on Johnny. Like you could split.
It's a good way of doing it. It's a portfolio method. Okay. Both Cam Ward and JJ McCarthy rank as approximately mid QB twos in Dynasty Data Labs startup ADP. Consensus was that all 2024 QBs would have gone over Ward in this year's draft. Why isn't JJ McCarthy ahead of Ward when you add the difference in quality of weapons and offensive system?
Is it as simple as we haven't seen him do it?
That correct.
In spite of all that, we're still starting from zero with him. And frankly, I've got Penix. I've got all three of them ranked back to back: Ward, Penix, and McCarthy. And it's because we have three starts combined from all three of them. So we've got, between the three of them, we really don't know who they are.
And
so,
all of them are Penixes.
And to be fair, the premise of the question is that all the 2024 QBs would have gone over Ward. I feel like of all the 2024 QBs, though, the ones that most people were lowest on was JJ McCarthy and would have been.
And Knicks were the other, was the other
one. Yeah, Knicks was the guy that was, everyone was really surprised he was a first rounder. Everyone thought, oh, Denver might get him in the second. And everyone made fun of Denver for reaching on him at 12. And oh, wait, they just made the playoffs.
So I will say I haven't been a JJ McCarthy guy. I think he's, you know, there's trucks and trailers. And I think JJ McCarthy is king trailer on that Michigan offense. And, you know, you want to believe that the quality of the weapons and the offensive system are going to be good. I will like to see that. I would take Cam Ward ahead of McCarthy right now.
I think last year, especially before the season started, I don't think anyone would have said they would have taken Bo Nix ahead of Cam
Ward. No.
Like, we're saying that now because we've seen Bo Nix have success.
Yes.
And frankly, like, even the few games Penix played, seemed to look decent, right? So none of these guys have fallen flat on their face. Like, there's no Anthony Richardson or Trey Lance in that.
No.
Except potentially McCarthy, because he's the one we haven't seen anything of.
Right.
But I also think that if this class wasn't so good last year, would we really be saying that? Are we, like, I think that before the draft, there's no way. If Cam Ward had come out last year, there's no way he's QB7. I think he's going at least ahead of Knicks. So I think if we saw Knicks be really bad last year, mm-hmm. I don't think anyone's saying that, too, that six quarterbacks all go ahead of Cam
Ward. So, I think Ward would have gone ahead of Penix too in revisionist history because I think he looks good, but he was old and had knee issues and all these other things that people were freaking out about.
And everyone was surprised the Falcons took him that high.
Yeah.
And yet they seemed the most surprised that he was there than everyone, because they justified that as to why they signed Cousins, because, oh, we didn't think we were drafting Penix. We didn't think we were going to reach drastically on this dude that everyone else hated.
Yeah,
like, you really liked him that much? You thought someone else was drafting him, really, Atlanta? Mm-hmm.
It
is what it is.
Okay,
I've got Cam Ward ahead of McCarthy.
In spite of
the offensive weapons and systems, it's just believing in the profile better. I didn't necessarily love Ward. Like, I think flat out, if Dart got top 10 capital, I'd have Dart ranked ahead of Ward. But it's okay. He's like the third QB on his team. He's outside the top 20.
Ooh.
That's enough for the draft capital disparity. I'll rank Dart kind of below that tier of Ward and McCarthy. But if Dart was getting top 10 capital, I think he's, for fantasy, a better profile than all those guys.
Man, if Dart went to the Giants at 3, I don't know if I'd put him ahead of all of that, but that's an interesting thought. he went at 3 instead of 20.
And I mean, in theory, that shouldn't be a difference, right? Because it's the same team, it's the same situation, but it's the, if he went 3rd overall, he's probably starting this
year. Yeah, right. You know he's starting.
But now, yeah, because he's not starting on our team.
So yeah.
That's where the value comes in, I think.
Right. Okay. Assume a world in which Justin Fields becomes an average real-life NFL QB. He already is. And sticks around.
That's not much of a stretch.
No. And sticks around with the Jets for a while. In this hypothetical world, where does the newly paid Garrett Wilson rank as a dynasty wide receiver playing with a functional QB we know he gets along with? Before Kyle answers, I'll answer quickly. He's going to be top 12. He's top 12 if that in that scenario to me. He's that talented.
Garrett Wilson's wide receiver 12 in my dynasty rankings right now. So, yep. The problem is I don't think he has that much higher to go. Like, maybe at the absolute high, it's probably wide receiver 9. But this is something we've talked about on Dynasty Six-Pack all year. We view it, like, across the, like, all three of us on the show, clear top 8. And then, like, there's a massive tier break after wide receiver 8, whether that's Nico Collins or Brian Thomas Jr. or Amon-Ra St. Brown. But, I mean, it feels like it's going to be – unless he goes and has a Ja'Marr Chase season like last year – for Garrett Wilson to really elevate into that top.
Yeah.
I have a hard time seeing that. So I'd say wide receiver 9. If the best case scenario happens, it's probably wide receiver 9.
I agree.
Yeah, I'm with you both. I was just looking to, like, because you can go back a couple years on MFL. DJ Moore was wide receiver 10 with Justin Fields 2 years ago.
Hell yeah, he was.
Production-wise. So, I mean, Justin Fields is good enough to support a very talented wide receiver 1. And I can see Garrett Wilson doing similar. And I kind of agree basically what you guys were saying in that 9-10 range.
He's more talented than DJ is too. Garrett Wilson is.
I mean, depends. Like, what talented? Okay, I actually like define that. How is he more talented?
In terms of overall what he can do after the catch, especially, Garrett Wilson is a better player. And what he can do athletically.
I was thinking before the catch, he's more talented. He's the better quick separator. I can kind of get open anywhere, whether it's versus zone versus man. Whereas DJ Moore, he's especially great on deeper throws, high efficiency on the yards. I actually thought better after the catch than Wilson, but I could be wrong.
Yeah.
But all to say, how did DJ Moore get that top 10 season? I think he only did it with like elevated yards. I think he had like
caught a bunch of deep balls. Yeah.
It's like 18 yards per catch, right?
Yeah,
I think he did it on like 130 targets.
Yeah,
Garrett Wilson has never had that few targets in a season. So
something 136 targets, 96 catches, 1364 yards.
The way Garrett Wilson produces, he's probably not a wide receiver 1 on only 135 targets. Right. Now, he probably gets there because he just commands more targets than DJ Moore ever did, because he's done that throughout his career. Again, I think 135 would be a low mark for Wilson on a 17-game pace. So, in theory, he should earn more targets because he has throughout his career. The really question is just the passing volume. Will Fields throw enough to get Garrett Wilson 150 targets? If he does, top 15 season's probably there for him. If he doesn't,
absolutely,
he probably can't produce the wide receiver 1 season the same way. Just the one hesitation. But is this a team that is not only committing to Justin Fields, so we will throw more because we're going to create a passing infrastructure for him to do it, unlike the Bears that just, I mean, I don't even know what the Bears did the Fields whole time. There was a disaster. And that's not just Packers bias. It was objectively a disaster the entire time.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think I have been fully buying back in on this, like, Jets bounce back. I know Rocky doesn't buy Jets ever because I think it's Hogue in his ear, but I am fully back in on this Jets offense, and I think Fields is going to be great for what that is. And I like the offensive coordinator, came from Detroit, and I like all of the pieces. So I think Garrett Wilson is at least a kind of top 12 wide receiver. I was just looking on Football Guys. He was 13 behind AJ Brown, JSN, Ladd McConkey, Drake London. I would take him over most of those. I mean, Drake London, you start to have a conversation, but I'd take him over JSN, I'd take him over Ladd, and I'd take him over AJ.
The one guy I have him over in my rankings is Jackson Smith and Jigba. As much as concerns with Wilson and Fields, Man, Sam Darnold.
Yeah.
What will he do outside of the structure of Minnesota? Like, that's almost the opposite of Fields, right? Like, this is maybe the best situation he's been in terms of offense. And, like, the Jets have really invested well in the offensive line. Like, he has two round one tackles kind of on either side, unlike what the Bears ever did. Yeah, they got him Darnell Wright that very last season, and Wright seems to be a good right tackle.
Yes.
Ended there for sure. But it was a little too late. Like, they did that too late in Fields' career. Like, now Fields is getting there, and the O-line's almost already established. Yeah, they drafted a guy this year in the first round, but if he's as good as, like, expected to be, he should start right away. Day one is left tackle, and then this team is – or, sorry, right tackle, and then this team is set to go. So, to me, it's the opposite with Darnold. Like, you're leaving the comfy, cozy situation in Minnesota with Kevin O'Connell and mostly with Justin Jefferson. Getting to throw, as good as JSN is, he's not Justin Jefferson. So I'm a little concerned with that quarterback situation. Was that just a fluke like last year, and Darnold returns to being the pumpkin he had always been? And I mean, I still think Jackson Jigba does well, but I'd rather bet on Justin Fields being better than Darnold. So I'd rather invest in Garrett Wilson than Jackson Jigba.
All right, we'll close on this. This is specifically for Rocky, and he can answer this. If the TA crowd doesn't bring the goods with volume of TA trades anymore, and you bring over the old find me a trade segment from It's Pretty Please, I'll stop asking too many questions to make time for it.
I'd be down to do that at least 1 week or something. I don't know. But we need to actually like plan that ahead of time because we need to get a roster submitted. I mean, I guess we could maybe just pull it from TA the day of or something. I don't know.
Can't just find a trade lying around here. Is there something under the microphone? Like, find me a trade. Oh, I found one on the street the other day.
I mean, technically, I guess I could just go into every TA league and just pick a team to find a trade for. I don't know. Maybe we could do that. But we usually get contacts and things like that on Junkies. You know, that was a fun segment. A lot of people liked it. So maybe it is something we could bring over here. Because, yeah, Junkies, unfortunately, is kind of come and gone. We had talked about it occasionally reviving it, but it's been like, I think close to a year now. And, I don't think it's coming back. So if there's any still Junkies fans out there, I think, unfortunately, Kyle raised his hand. Unfortunately, I think it's done for good. If we ever do come back, it will probably just be like one final episode or something. And if that doesn't happen this year, it's probably never happening. But anyway, enough about Dynasty Junkies. But the Find Me a Trade segment is fine. It would kind of fit into this show, too. So maybe it is something we'll do. And Frank on my screen, I've been trying to talk because Frank has disappeared. So I guess I'm just going to wrap up here unless Frank pops back in at some point. But Kyle, before we finish up with our stuff, why don't you remind – first, I want to thank you again for coming on tonight. It's been a blast. And then why don't you remind everybody who you are, what you do, and where they can find what you do.
Oh, yeah, super awesome, Rocky. Thanks for bringing me on. It's been a blockbuster episode, so to speak.
There you go.
I'm almost surprised you didn't take like Rocky V or something. maybe the first one you were a little too young. Or
yeah,
born, but
first one I think came out the year before I was born. But yeah.
Okay. So yeah, someone named Rocky, born in Philly in the late 70s. Wow.
Knocker.
Original, but no, you're truly an original, Rocky. So again, thank you. And thank you, Frank, for reaching out to me on the show. As I mentioned earlier, my name is Kyle Senra. I don't think I mentioned that. You guys mentioned that, but follow me on Twitter at Senra Says. And I've been with Fantasy Six Pack now, closing in on a year. I guess it's been about 10 months, written content, which will continue. Last year, I started by writing my goal line guide article series, which I used to write for Full Press Coverage, brought it over to Fantasy Six Pack. And it's a weekly look at predicting touchdowns on a week-to-week basis. And cross-referencing how good teams are offensively inside the five-yard line, but also looking at the defensive stats and figuring out which defenses are good at preventing touchdowns inside the five and which ones aren't, and thus allow a lot of touchdowns. So trying to find the crossover between the matchups. Does this offense line up really well against this defense? And figuring out on a week-to-week basis, where do we think the touchdowns are coming from which teams, but also split into rushing and passing so we can try and predict which players are more likely to score touchdowns. Because much as touchdowns tend to be this thing that people kind of get away from. Oh, it's fluky. And they kind of just leave it at that. And while there is a certain degree of that, we have to be understand, like, aware that touchdowns are huge for fantasy. Like, we want to try and we shouldn't necessarily be afraid of it. Like I say, because we talk all the time about upside outcomes, right? Rocky had like, oh, when you get to a certain point, just go for ceiling, because when you get late enough in a draft, like, no one has floors. So just go for the highest end upsides. It's so hard to predict things week to week. Rather than me trying to predict how many catches players are going to get on a week-to-week basis, I'm going to go for the highest end outcome. Can I correctly predict where touchdowns are going to be? And I figure that's a way to maybe get an edge. So those articles typically start coming out. I want to get a full month of data before I put the first one out. So usually week 5 is the first goal line guide. And that'll go through all the way through week 17, the fantasy football playoffs. So every week on Fantasy Six Pack, that article will be available as a tool to kind of help people guide them to ceiling outcomes. Where do we think these are? I'll be writing other articles for Fantasy Six Pack. We did a draft guide, all 32 teams represented, and I had the AFC South. So I did Jags, Colts, Texans, and Titans articles. So that's all available. And then, as mentioned, the show, Dynasty Six Pack. And for trade addicts, we do a trade of the week segment on the show. Sometimes it's our own. Sometimes we go to the Fantasy Six Pack Discord or even in our YouTube comments to get those trades. But yeah, we just, no matter what, we always like to end with some type of trade talk at the end of the episode in the trade of the week segment. So for those who like trades, you're guaranteed to get at least one trade every week on Dynasty Six Pack. I know, we're Wednesday nights, at 9:30 p.m. Eastern on the Fantasy Six Pack YouTube channel. So check those out. Come join us live, interact. Interacting with people in the comments and answering questions on the show. As Senra says, and check out everything at Fantasy Six Pack.
And Frank has returned to bail me out of having
magically to close the show. Here I am.
I rambled stuff, long enough.
Yes, thank you. Our stuff, patreon.com/JRXPod. You can watch us while we record, see my whole body disappear as I do the dap. You can see Kyle's handsome face and all the stuff that we have going on. We also have our Discord chat, the Cool Kids Club. We are going to definitely start hyping up the news as camp stuff starts. I'm going to inundate the chat. I don't know if that's incentive or not, but maybe it is. And I guess the most important stuff right now is Fantasy Cares. SFB season's going on. We were going to talk about it, but we're at an hour and 40 minutes. We'll touch on it next week. Tadpole Bowl's going on. If anyone's doing that with me, I'm in UCLA division. So if you guys are doing Tadpole, reach out to me, Frank in the chat on the DMs and Twitter and Blue Sky. Rocky's at Dynasty FF Addict. I know he's not doing Tadpole Bowl, but he's around. And I think that's it. As Russ Fisher always told us, if you have a trading problem, you're never alone. Good night, everybody.
Good night, Frank.
Thank you for listening to the Trade Addict Podcast, a member of the DLF family of podcasts, and a proud member in the Dynasty Addict Podcast Network. Please follow your hosts at Dynasty Haha and at Dynasty FF Addict. Please subscribe, rate, and review. We will catch you next time on the Trade Addict Podcast. Poopy pants.
Daddy's the best.
See ya.